Hello and welcome to another Pharmacy in Practice podcast. So today we're really, really lucky to be joined by the Hospital M Farm. Now the Hospital M Farm has a growing and very successful Facebook page which you might like to go and have a look at. But in the meantime, would you like to introduce yourself, Hospital M Farm?
Hi everyone, I'm the Hospital M Farm. I run a page on Facebook which started off as memes based on hospital pharmacy work, but since last year I started to raise awareness of hospital pharmacy professionals and the type of work that they do. And more recently I'm also found on Twitter and Instagram.
I think we should just get stuck in. So let's tackle clinical. Let's just go there.
Oh, okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I'm sick of it. Actually, this is the end of the clinical debate in pharmacy. It ends tonight. Okay, we're going to finish it. So what's your opinion on clinical pharmacy? Are you a clinical pharmacist?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me this, Jonathan. I was actually waiting for you to ask me this. I would class myself as a clinical pharmacist, yes. I think a lot of the hospital pharmacy staff are clinical professionals, but then equally we have non-clinical pharmacy professionals as well. But this is the interesting thing, that the two wouldn't have been a big deal to me at all. So ever since I've practiced in, well, I've always practiced in hospital, but ever since I've practiced as a pharmacist, the two have not been a big deal to me, whether or not I work as a non-clinical or a clinical pharmacist. And actually, as you move further up the roles in hospital pharmacy, you do tend to deviate between the two. The two don't matter to me. It's not until I actually joined Twitter and I realized that for some people, it's actually a really big deal.
Yeah, it is. It is. People get very excited about it. I don't, but some people get very upset. Maybe some of them are listening.
I mean, I've seen some of the upset that it's caused people. And I'm not quite sure why that is. I'm not quite sure why people feel so uncomfortable with the word. I mean, it's almost taboo actually to some people. You can't mention it without there being questions, and I'm failing to understand why that's the case.
I think maybe it's is it not something to do with the fact that it implies some kind of, you know, unspoken hierarchy in the profession?
But does it though? Because to me it doesn't. So it's really interesting that to some people it does, and I'd want to know why. To me it doesn't. I feel completely indifferent. So to me, the reason I've called myself a clinical pharmacist is because a lot of my work, about sort of 60% of the work that I do, is patient-facing clinical work. And then there is also non-patient-facing clinical work. And then there is completely non-clinical work that I do, which is equally as essential. And in hospital pharmacy, you have a variety of roles for pharmacists and technicians, which are both clinical and non-clinical. So to me, it's not even, I mean, just the fact that I'm actually putting them into brackets now. I'm not comfortable with that. Why am I doing that? This is what Twitter does to me. I don't need to do that. I was very comfortable in it. And now here I am thinking, is this clinical? Is this non-clinical? And that's not right. You know, you need to just feel comfortable in what you are doing. And
you know what? I was just going to say, you're turning into a non-clinical snowflake pharmacist.
I knew you were going to bring that in as well somehow. What would you classify yourself as then?
Well, on my Twitter thing, I'm a pharmacist. I mean, you know, that's how I feel about it. There's all manner of ways to kind of divide the profession at the moment, isn't there? You know, sort of Facebook groups, Twitter, all the rest of it. So, I don't know. I don't think the term's very helpful. I just see myself as a pharmacist. But it does interest me that in the future I would hope that there would be much more recognition, much more formal recognition for, you know, advanced practice and stuff like that. I think that's something that we're not very good at, and I know certain leadership bodies are working hard on that, but you know, if you're a doctor, for example, you know, the medical profession, you go in and you expect to progress, and you get, you know, my impression is you get sort of credit, depending on what level you get to. And there's very sort of well-defined career paths. Community is a good example because to be honest, there's still not really a career path. But quite interesting in Scotland, the recent news about the community pharmacy prescribing course that's happening. They're training 50 community pharmacist independent prescribers. So that's quite interesting because that'll differentiate a bit, and that's positive. I'm really doing a bad job about talking about hospital pharmacy.
I know, so this is cool, isn't it? Community taking over once again.
I know, once epic again. Feel.
Here we go. I think if one of your questions, Jonathan, was why did I start the page? I think you've just answered it yourself.
Yeah. Thanks very much. Right. Anyway, let's get right back to hospital pharmacy. Pretend I'm an idiot, which is not very hard to imagine.
Not true.
Fair enough. But to be fair, I've never worked in hospital, so I'm interested. What are the burning issues like? Let's start at the start. What is it like to work in hospital pharmacy right now?
Quite a difficult environment, frankly. And the two issues they're basically the two common issues which I think are affecting anyone in any profession, and that's a lack of funding and staff shortages. And the problem is that obviously over the years, just as a profession, we have worked so hard to create opportunities for ourselves. And it's not easy because obviously I don't know much about community, so I'm not going to talk about that and patronize other people. But within hospital pharmacy, over the number of years, we have worked so hard to make a name for ourselves amongst the multidisciplinary team, amongst all sorts of variety of professionals. And it is difficult because actually people could hire other members of the multidisciplinary team if it means having to pay them less. And we have really strived and worked hard to make sure that actually some of those opportunities were coming our way as well, and our skill set was being utilized. However, with the staff shortages, with the lack of funding, we're actually taking a few steps back and we're going back to where we started. And some of these roles are currently being lost, unfortunately, which is a real shame. So I'm not going to speak for the entire country here, but those are just some of the issues that I'm coming across, frankly. So I'm seeing techs being underutilized or in some cases not being utilized because they're putting the work back on the pharmacists again. This means actually a lot of the advanced and specialist roles that we took on, or just advanced practice that we took on, we are no longer able to carry it to the ability that we'd like to. So actually we're going backwards as opposed to progressing forwards in my eyes.
You see, that's quite interesting because my impression of hospital pharmacy is that that's where a lot of the early modern evolution of a modern pharmacist happened, and also for pharmacy technicians as well. The PDA report recently on technicians was quite interesting because they sort of indicated that, you know, the development of hospital pharmacy technicians happened earlier and in a more organized fashion than community. That's basically the point of the report. And I think my impression is anyway, pharmacists took that same path. Do you think that would be fair to say? So do you think it's stalled now or what's happened? Do you think the progression of hospital pharmacists has stalled? I mean, I know we're generalizing, but
I don't think it has. I think it's one of those where we still have some opportunities. We obviously have the developing role of consultant pharmacists. We have more specialist roles coming on as well. But a lot of the hospitals currently are also merging with one another. A lot of them are trying to implement the Carter report and the findings of the Carter report, which means working and collaborating with other hospitals and trusts. But as is always the case, sometimes these things get misinterpreted and misinterpreted. Oh my God. And it just means that actually sometimes individuals see this as a reason to cut the costs and cut the staffing, when actually we should be looking at this as a reason to progress more, to get more funding and to get more staffing to build a bigger and better service.
Mm-hmm. You see, the consultant pharmacist role, again, I'm not an expert on it, but my understanding is it's an NHS thing. And that, again, that's a differentiation in practice, isn't it? So that's possibly, again, how, you know, hospital and the NHS leading the way in terms of professional development. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, the practice in hospital pharmacy has always been very advanced. And I think that's what I loved about it. It was very patient-focused, and it didn't have to be directly patient-facing to be patient-focused, you know. We have the amazing Medicines Information Service, where actually we've seen some of the cuts recently, and I utilize so much of that service as a pre-reg student, but also actually as a pharmacist. So to actually see that service being taken away or that service not being implemented to the standard it should be in some of the hospitals is a real shame, because that is an amazing service which so many healthcare professionals benefit from. But it has always been advanced practice in hospitals, and I didn't properly appreciate that actually until I moved away from like a big mainstream hospital and worked into a smaller hospital. And I thought, wow, that was quite something that I used to work in, and I never really realized it. It's something that I've taken for granted. And I think it will be interesting actually to have someone on my page who has worked in pharmacy for a very, very long time, who can really talk me through what it was like initially when they were actually setting up these services, when they were setting up these new roles, and the battles they faced against other healthcare professionals to set these roles up, because it's really hard work. In the hospital that I'm at, it's a very small hospital. People are not even aware of a specialist role, let alone the role of a general clinical pharmacist. And it's quite, I have faced some serious difficulties in trying to progress a service. It's the difficulties that I would not face if I was in a bigger or a larger NHS trust. And it's really given me an idea of actually what some of my experienced professionals and colleagues would have faced back in time. And it's, that's some real hard work that's gone into developing the service that it is today. You know, yeah. It's made me appreciate that. It's not something I would have actually ever appreciated had I not made the move from a larger to a smaller hospital.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of topics I've covered on pharmacy and practice recently, and they've touched on hospital pharmacy, and a lot of the way you're speaking about hospital pharmacy kind of resonates. You know, it's a battleground. It's like, you know, there's hierarchy. It's still, pharmacists are still fighting to just, you know, get to do their job and be recognized for that. One something I'm interested in is, because I would be an advocate in community for differentiation and practice, so, you know, layers of competence and competence-based learning and all that kind of thing. So I see, my understanding is that the consultant pharmacist role is sort of a step along that journey in hospital. I know there are, I think, if I'm not mistaken, there are some primary care consultant pharmacists now. But what is the effect on junior pharmacists of these roles? Is it motivational? Like, do you want to be a consultant pharmacist? Is that your ambition?
Okay, so I've not worked with a consultant pharmacist as of yet. I have come across a few, however. And for me personally, yes, it is. It is, because, but then that's probably because I'm in a specialist, a niche specialist role. You know, maybe it would be different if I was a general clinical pharmacist. I'm not sure if I would want to be a consultant pharmacist then. But so for me, it is motivational, actually. That's something, I'm one of the things I'm hopefully aspiring to be, because I think that's the ultimate circle of expertise. That's the ultimate reward, I suppose, without having to go down the role of a principal pharmacist or a deputy chief pharmacist. So for me, it's nicer actually that there are opportunities for pharmacists to specialize in their roles and be recognized for that, because we have doctors as consultants, don't we? We have consultants in care of the elderly, we have oncology consultants, hematology consultants, endocrinology, all sorts. So actually, why don't we have pharmacy consultants in those areas as well? I mean, obviously we have them now, but I think it's nicer that we are actually standing shoulder to shoulder with those healthcare professionals, but within our own professions and within our own skill set and within our own expertise.
Cool. Yeah, that's positive. Going back to your page, who's your favorite? I mean, that's not fair to ask you who's your favorite, but who was the most notable, or which contributor made the most impact, shall we say? However you measure impact.
That's an interesting one. For me, just to sort of clarify, I don't actually have a favorite because I've learned something from nearly all of them. I know this sounds like a very diplomatic answer, but that is actually the truth. And they've all sort of taught me about some things that I thought, oh, I didn't know this. This is really interesting. But I think for me, the most notable was actually James Rickard. And the reason was because, some people choose to do their posts in advance and some people do it on the day. And James was doing his post for me on the day and he sent his very first post. So I actually normally don't have an idea of what people are going to write about. And when I received that post, like every hour was accounted for. And it was, I think it resonated a bit with the work I was doing in terms of how busy it was. But obviously James was at a much more higher and senior level. And I just remember looking at that post and thinking, wow, I don't even know what to say. And to think my day was busy. I just remember being really shocked by that, basically, because I think it's because every hour was accounted for. And I didn't really know what to say. So I just quickly pressed post and posted it on my page because I thought, wow.
Very good. Very good. Why do you feel you need to be anonymous? Do you mind me asking?
That's a good question. I think initially when I made the page, I didn't really know where it would take me, essentially. And I hadn't made the page with any big aspirations or anything. By the way, can I just clarify this? It was only because I'd started off as memes, because at the time I worked in an emergency assessment unit. It was a really busy unit. And I used to sort of come home sometimes and I used to make these memes related on hospital pharmacy practice and just sort of publish them. So it was just a bit of fun. It wasn't anything more. And then I thought, actually, it's quite a good platform for me to address some of the issues, but also promote a bit about hospital pharmacy. So far, I think the hospital M-Pharm has actually become an identity. So I'm not completely anonymous to, you know, everyone out there. Some people do know who I am. When I first started the page, a lot of the people then knew who I was. So I'm not completely anonymous. But at the time, with time, actually, some of the individuals with anonymous pages and some without got in touch with me and gave me some really good advice about social media, actually. And they gave me advice without me asking, which I really appreciated because, you know, who does that? And they actually recommended that if I was going down the path of highlighting some serious issues, some serious concerns within practice, that it was better to stay anonymous because obviously you can't trust everybody out there. And unfortunately, like there is with every single profession, there are people out there who at any single opportunity would love to report you or complain about you for things which are true, but for things that they just don't like. So yeah. Someone doesn't like you and that would be it. They want to report you, even though actually what you have said isn't wrong and what you have said isn't unprofessional, but it's because they don't like it. They would view it as unprofessional and that would be it. So actually that was the advice that I received from a couple of the anonymous pages. I'm not going to name them, but thank you for that. You know who you are.
See, that's interesting. So there's, you see, the why behind that is interesting to me. So do you think your name would be blackened?
Good question. I don't think so. Well, I would like to think that's not the case.
Well, I just to clarify that, I mean, I don't think there's I haven't seen anything unprofessional on your page. I think it's very immediate. It's very up to date. It's a very interesting way to understand the roles that you're covering and the issues that you're raising. Personally, I don't see a problem with it. But what interests me is your reticence to come above the parapet. Because
I get messages sometimes which are actually very vindictive, believe it or not. And I think I did a post a while back, and this was I can't even remember how long ago this was, and I had made it clear then that every time I talk about hospital pharmacy issues, somebody messages me or comments and says that issues are similar in community and I'm not acknowledging them, I'm not highlighting them. And, you know, you sort of say, oh, yes, that's true. And then you start to reach a middle ground as you do with any normal conversation. But I made it clear in that post that actually from now on, I'm only talking about hospital pharmacy because this is what my page was about. And you can't change me, you know, that's what I'd made the page initially. And that's what I want to talk about. But sometimes I do receive messages which are vindictive. I think I don't really talk about them enough, actually, and maybe I should. I've received messages from people who have got upset because I've mentioned something about community pharmacy, and they have said, do you have any idea what it's like to work there? This is not true. And it was all in good humor. None of it was vindictive. But I suppose it's one of those things, you can't please everyone. And I think if someone has had a hard day and they're coming on my page and they're seeing something, and people would pick even the, I mean, I don't even know how to put it across. Like, sometimes it's actually hospital pharmacy staff who don't like the work of some other professionals, and they would message me saying, why did they have to mention this? Do they think they're the only busy ones out there? It's along those lines. And I've never obviously passed those messages on or anything. I've never, you know, you would know this better than anyone else. You've got to still be professional when you run a page like that. And I've never really sort of opened up about these messages. But yeah, I think it's because I receive these, there's this side to it as well. And when I'm doing something as a sideline to my main career, what I don't want is for someone's perception to think that I'm being vindictive and then to report me for it, because I don't think that's fair. And I need to protect myself. I feel the need to protect myself. And I think it's because of these reasons. I would be quite happy to just come across as me. And I actually do try and introduce myself to some people when I see them at Congress, so conferences and stuff, because I think it's only fair. But I do have to be careful sometimes, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting. And what, like, what's your, what's the why behind the page? Like, why did you do it? Why did you start the page?
I started the page initially, it was just a bit of fun. And it was, it's on Facebook, which is not, there weren't many pharmacy pages on Facebook. And if there, well, if there were, I didn't see them. And the ones that were focused mainly on community pharmacy, and I didn't sort of see anything based on hospital pharmacy. And at the time, the memes were the trends, you know, there were a lot of memes, and suddenly you were seeing this new trend of pharmacy-based memes. And I thought, I want something that applies to me too. And because I worked in a really pressurized environment, I would come home and think of how what I did today would really apply to this meme. So I just started making them and putting them on this page. never really expecting it to take off the way it did. That's how it started off initially. And then in 2017, I think it was December time, I actually thought, I want to do more, because the thing is, there are the professionals you work with do understand your work. They really appreciate you. The patients that you come across do understand your work too. But there are still people who don't. And I think it's when you've had a really busy day and you come home and you think, why don't you know what I do? Like, how come, you know, it's just that one remark, I think, that's enough to make you think, how can you still not know what I do? How can you still not appreciate what I do? You know, I'm still quite a newbie in the profession. There are people before me who have worked in this profession for like 25, 30 years. And I just thought, actually, you know what? I'm going to start promoting it the way I want to do it. And it's something I'd wanted to do for a while. But I was also, I think it's worth mentioning that the other thing which started off was actually the other side of social media. So we see a lot of people who are actually using social media to build their portfolios. And I know this might come across as really ironic. And I'm not sure if I view that as being good for the profession. So I think for me, actually, it was quite disheartening, because I was thinking, how do you have the time to attend this conference? I didn't even have the time to go to the in-house educational day, and you have attended a conference, and I'd love to do that. Or how do you have time to talk about this? And I didn't even have time to move away from this patient setting and from that patient setting. So it actually made me doubt my own practice, and it shouldn't have. It shouldn't have that effect, you know? Social media should be about empowerment.
Yeah, but I think
positivity.
Yeah, positive. There are downsides, though. I mean, so Pharmacy in Practice is a magazine. It's in many ways it's quite old fashioned, but it's online. But I try quite hard to separate, you know, the editorial side from the commercial side. So the trouble with social media is that what I see a lot of is a blurring of those lines, and I think that's where problems happen. And obviously there's well-known cases in, you know, in politics, how social media is, you know, taking over Facebook as allegedly won elections and stuff like that. So there's quite strong downsides, and it's quite polarizing as well, I think. But no, that's really interesting. So what's next for you?
Oh, now I can't tell you everything, can I? I do have a few plans. I like to sort of experiment with a couple of them here and there. So I'm not going to mention them as such because that's just giving the game away. But I do have a few plans. I'd really like, actually, now is a fantastic opportunity. I'd really like a chief pharmacist to showcase their work with us. I've been after one for absolute ages, and no one seems to want to come forwards. So
Well, let's go and get him or her. Who is it? Who do you want?
anyone listening, please, if you're a chief pharmacist, even if it's someone who's retired and is no longer working, I'd be really, really interested to hear what a normal working week for you was like. And actually, it will be even more interesting to know how hospital pharmacy practice has changed, over the years. So if anyone's listening, can you please get in touch with me?
Right, if you're a chief pharmacist, get in touch with the hospital M Farm. One another topic I wanted to ask you about was something we've covered extensively in pharmacy and practice, and the I know it's in some quarters it's been done to death, but it's very important to me. Is bullying. So have you,
Okay.
what I've learned from listening and talking to all these people that have been bullied, is that hierarchy is really a bit of a cause of bullying at times, or it's an environment where there's a distinct hierarchy, there's a bullying tends to be rife. Do you recognize that, and have you seen it in hospital pharmacy?
That's a very good question. And I think to date, I'm not sure if I have. I think I have seen it to some extent, but I think it's like you say, it's that fine line between hierarchy and bullying, and you're not sure what you have witnessed and what you haven't. Because obviously, when you would start in a hospital pharmacy, what I tend to find was there are individuals, and it doesn't actually matter which pay scale they're on or whether they have a senior role or a junior role. If someone has been there for years, they feel that they have a right above the other person. And that should never be the case. So, as a pre-veg, you kind of thought, okay, that's fine. I just need to learn the work, learn the skills from them. And, that's fine. You kind of tend to accept it. So, I'm not sure if I have witnessed bullying or whether that was just the hierarchy norm or whether that
Yeah.
is bullying, but it's covered by that hierarchy norm. I know that when I worked in where I did my pre-reg, actually, we did used to have that quite a lot, and pre-regs weren't necessarily treated appropriately at all. But I think I was just me. I wasn't going to let anyone talk to me like that, and I wasn't going to be treated like that. So I made my ideas, and I expressed myself quite clearly from the start. And I think people do tend to back off, because when you're very open and honest, and when you say things as they are, and you're very open about it in front of people, then I think they do tend to back down. But I
Oh,
think.
definitely. I think that's a great point. Like the more honest, direct you can be to folk, and like in the moment, to
Yeah,
use a
that's
corporate term that I used to have thrust upon me,
it.
in the moment feedback
Yeah.
is so effective, and it just nips it in the bud. But the trouble is, I think the difference between bullying behavior and bullying in inverted commas is, it's the constant nature, it's the drip
Yeah.
feed of behavior. That's what came out of the articles. One of them was by a hospital pharmacist actually, and they spoke a lot about the hierarchy and stuff, so it's quite interesting to hear your view on it. What have you
I
got? Sorry, carry on.
there is a I have seen that sort of trend where I went in a place that I went to after my pre-registration year, and I used to see this in particular between an admin member of staff and between a pharmacist, where the admin member of staff was, you could almost see the glint in their eye every time this pharmacist used to walk in. And it was quite sickening actually, because you almost wanted to say to them, do you not have any other things to do? Like, why be so negative? Why be like that? I don't understand. And there was nothing in my eyes that the pharmacist did which would render this kind of behavior. Not that bullying is appropriate in any circumstance, but there was nothing which was done on the pharmacist's part which would make the other person want to be that way.
And who was the bully in that case? Was the pharmacist the bully?
It was the pharmacist.
Okay.
Sorry, did you say the bully or the person being bullied?
No, the pharmacist was the bully, is that right?
No, the admin member of staff.
Ah, right, okay. That's interesting. So that was bullying back up the hierarchy.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Yeah.
I think this is the thing. The hierarchy, you assume that it's somebody who's more senior than you and, you know, someone who's, because obviously we go by bandings in the NHS and things, you know, in terms of the pay scale, someone who's a higher banding than you. But that's not true, because from my experience, it's somebody who's been there for a very long time. And normally I find they're the worst, because they sometimes just feel like they have that right over you. Because
sorry to interrupt.
They've been there for so many years. They've seen so many come and go, and oh, you're just another one, you know, and that's not right.
Yeah, it's a really difficult one, because if you think about it from an organizational point of view, if there's no hierarchy, I mean, I must admit, I'm linking hierarchy to, and I'm extrapolating that to, you know, suggesting that creates an environment where bullying is more common and stuff like that. But I think from an organizational point of view, you must see it from their point of view and think, well, if there's no hierarchy, there's no order. And if there's no order, stuff doesn't get done, basically. So, you know, there must be somewhere in the middle where there, you know, I don't know how to word it, but like the hierarchy is gentle or something like that. I don't know.
Once again, it's a case of mutual respect, but also being assertive. So one of the environments I worked in, I used to work with a very senior technician who had this ideology that pharmacists, the junior pharmacists in particular, needed babysitting, essentially, in her terms. And, you know, and that she was helping us in behaving the way she was. But I made it quite clear that actually we have different roles and responsibilities. And there are things that she cannot do as a pharmacist, not because I don't think that she can, but because legally there are two different roles, you know. So there's a clear boundary in between the two. But equally, that doesn't mean that I'm not going to respect her for the amount of experience she has and for the knowledge that she has and for the help that she's providing me. But it took some time. It took some time for her to realize that actually we need to work in our limitations, but also that she needs to respect me and she needs to let me get on with the tasks and not interfere in those roles. And actually, it doesn't dampen down the amount of respect that I will give her in return. But it took some time, and I can totally appreciate that not everyone is of the demeanor and of that assertive nature to bring this on. So I can see people's difficulty, but it took some time in that.
Yeah, it's such a difficult area, really.
It is really hard. But I think one thing I have definitely learned is that I will not be scared to call it out if I see it.
Yeah, good for you. Good for you. And that's that's all you can do.
At all. You know, it's just if I see someone, and actually I do call it out. I think that's the thing. I use humor and I use sarcasm. I'm generally a fairly sarcastic person, and I use it collectively too to actually call it out. So in a way that the person knows that actually what they're doing is wrong, but equally it's not said in a manner which might be seen as vindictive. So anyone who's worked with me, they will instantly know what I'm talking about. I do call these things out because they're not acceptable.
Cool. It's really interesting. Right, that was a bit heavy going. So to finish, I need your help. You're the second. We've done a few podcasts actually. I can't remember how many we've done. Some of the articles, taking them onto the podcast, but you're the second actual person that I've had on the podcast, which is very exciting. I know, and we've got. I'm going to put a plug in for our podcast here. So we've got really proud to be interviewing Duncan Rodkin next month. We're doing next month as well. We're doing around the office in the PDA. So we're going to speak to Diane and Paul and some of the gang down there. But I need your help because I don't have any features yet. So have you got any ideas? If you come up with an idea right now, it may well stick. So I was thinking, you know, I could ask everyone, what's your favorite drug and why? Or if you were a drug, what would you be?
I mean, you could always be controversial, couldn't you? You could ask whether they'd want to be clinical or non-clinical. That would be interesting.
But we can't do that because the clinical debate's finished now. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I knew you'd mop that up fairly quickly.
We're finished. Yeah, that's it. Over. Done. So thank you very much for joining us, Hospital M Farm.
Thank you for having me.
That's absolutely fine. If you're interested in hospital pharmacy, you want to, maybe you're considering a role there, maybe you're you just want to know about other roles, go to the Hospital Farm Facebook page. Okay, well, thank you very much for joining us, and we'll speak to you soon, hopefully.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Cheers.
Thank you very much for listening and supporting Pharmacy in Practice podcast. Next month, for example, we're speaking to Duncan Rudkin. Thank you so much to him for giving up his time. We're going to be calling in with Greenlight Pharmacy down in London. And also, we're going to be speaking to some of the guys at the PDA in February as well. So thanks again for your support, and to all those that have subscribed, much appreciated. See you soon.